Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. Well, okay, so there's some bad news, you know, given what happened last night. Not exactly news to y'all if you've been paying attention. We also, though, have good news today. You know how distraught our man Charles Fishman is when he has to miss a show. And he had to miss a show Tuesday. Fish on Friday on Tuesday. He had to miss this Tuesday. He was otherwise occupied. Today, he's doing a makeup. You think John Martin missed? Think he's doing a makeup?
I do not, John.
Nope. That's the kind of work ethic Charles Fishman has. And so instead of Fish on Friday on Tuesday, it is Fish on Friday on Tuesday on Friday. Really, it's a throwback because this segment originally began as Fish on Friday. It was on Fridays, and then Fridays were too busy, and so we moved it to Tuesday, and it became Fish on Friday on Tuesday. Now, however, today, special edition, Fish on Friday on Tuesday on Friday. So we'll do that in the second hour. Also have Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock, where we'll talk to him about the NBA, the Grizzlies. Grizzlies play again tonight against the Spurs. The rematch, Jeffrey. Do you like this? Is something that's new in the NBA. This sort of, you know, Denver came
the home, whatever the, yeah, the home, the road trip, yeah, or the, whatever, yeah, the little series, little, if you will.
Yeah, do you like them?
I guess like it kind of makes sense. Although I feel like more times than not
they split.
Yeah.
It does depend how they, well, like Denver. Denver came to Memphis. What happened? They split.
And they didn't have Jokic
without
both games.
Jokic. Yeah. That was certainly anticlimactic. If you get Denver for that little segment and there's no Jokic, it's certainly anticlimactic. That's one probably the Grizzlies should have swept. When it's unfolding the way it is here, I think it's fun. It adds juice. It's like a little mini series, you know, like,
sure.
Oh, there's bad blood because Ja either dunked or didn't dunk, if you're blind, on Wemby. And so we will seek revenge, is what they're saying in San Antonio. Anyway, we'll talk to Chris Harrington about that straight up at 10 o'clock. Also, David Lynch died. You see that?
I did see this yesterday.
So were you a David Lynch fan? Is there anything that David Lynch created that you're like, God, that was awesome?
So he's one of those guys that I know people that are film buffs think very highly of him.
I think he has a very good reputation among the film buffs.
But I don't think there was...
Have you seen anything? Have you seen... So the ones...
I was trying to look at...
I think I watched a little of Twin Peaks.
I know, like, Twin Peaks is one of those shows that, like, people that are very into, like, good TV...
It's a cult following for Twin Peaks. And I watched a little of Twin Peaks, and that's it. That's all I've ever seen. It doesn't surprise you. I'm no great film expert. And Mulholland Drive was the one was much acclaimed. Elephant Man.
Yeah.
I gather it was the most mainstream, biggest sort of mainstream success that he had, although Mulholland Drive is considered a masterpiece. Never saw Mulholland Drive. Never saw Elephant Man, but he died at the age of 73, maybe. He grew up, he was an Eagle Scout.
I think he was 78, wasn't he?
Was he 78? He was an Eagle Scout. That sort of surprised me. And
he was also one of those guys, I never knew if he was American or British.
Led a very interesting life. I read the obit. I love obits. Led a very interesting life as he sort of, he started out as a painter. Started out as a painter.
He was a musician, too.
Yeah, he was a deeply skilled fellow. Anyway, also read, by the way, the Bob Uecker. That broke yesterday,
yes.
when we learned that Bob Uecker had died, and learned some things about him, which I did not know. I knew he wasn't, because he would make fun of himself as a ball player, right?
Yes.
He played six seasons, batted 200, 14 home runs. But in 1965, He hit home runs off of Gaylord Perry and Sandy Koufax.
Listen, if you're only going to hit 14, those are two pretty good ones to have.
That was a claim to fame for him. There are two statues of him in Miller Park. One of them is a takeoff of the Miller Lite commercial, you know, right here in the front row, right? Like that, right? Whatever. There is a statue of him sitting way, way up.
Yes, they have the Euchre seats.
Right, the Euchre seats there. In 1967, he led the league in passed balls. He was catcher, of course.
Yep.
Led the league in passed balls with 27 in 76 games.
Yes.
That's a...
Well, he was catching Phil Niekro. Yes, the knuckleball.
And not only that, Phil Niekro gives him credit for saying, just throw the damn knuckleball.
Yeah.
He did say, one of his good lines was, he was explaining to people how you catch a knuckler. He said, the way to catch a knuckleball is to wait until it stops rolling and pick it up.
Yep.
He then sort of, I mean, he was obviously, he was colorful. He was a clown. He, in the 1964 World Series, where he was a Cardinal, he didn't play, but he was a Cardinal. There was a tuba lying on the field, and he took the tuba, a sousaphone, one of those ones that wraps around you and has the bell sticking up, and he went out and shagged balls with the tuba.
Sounds about right. Feels on brand.
Caught a few, bunch dinged up. The Cardinals were not amused, and they deducted $260 in tuba damages from the winner's check of $8,622. He then became, he was friends with Al Hurt, who booked him in a nightclub to do a sort of a nightclub act. And that turned into Johnny Carson heard about it. He'd regularly go on Johnny Carson. In Major League, where, of course, he was Harry Doyle.
Yes.
And you probably know this. The lines were almost exclusively ad-libbed.
Correct. And he also claims he's never seen the movie.
I didn't know that. Claimed he'd never seen the movie. So, really, obviously, carved out a wildly entertaining... Like, listen, if all you have... as your accomplishment in life is you gave the world just a bit outside, like that's not nothing, right?
All four. All eight.
Right. So that is not nothing. He once was doing a broadcast with Howard Cosell, and Howard Cosell, he corrected him on a point of baseball, and Howard Cosell didn't enjoy that. Whatever.
No way.
Yeah, right. And he said, you know, okay, you're right. You don't have to be truculent about it. And then, because he wants to embarrass Bob Euchre, he says, do you know what truculent means? And Bob Euchre says, of course. If I had a truck and you borrowed it, that would be a truculent.
Right,
exactly. And 100% nailed it. Anyway, Bob Euchre. And I'm going on like this because I'm avoiding talking about the Memphis Tigers game last night. Of course, they lose to Temple 88-81. And let me tell you my reactions.
Okay.
I mean, we'll get to the rebounding. The rebounding is... we'll start with the rebounding. The rebounding is astonishingly awful. I mean, 49-25. That's what you would expect if the Grizzlies were playing a high school team.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's like a bye game ratio.
49-25. They gave up 22 offensive rebounds. Sometimes it felt like watching it like it was 22 on a single trip down the floor.
Yeah.
The Tigers had 25 rebounds, period. Temple had 22 offensive rebounds. And if you want to identify the play of the game, I think it was pretty clearly they had cut the lead to 65-63. You're like, okay. Okay, they've played like garbage. They're going to come back and win this thing. Although I never actually necessarily believe that. But 5:36 left.
Yeah,
they'd cut it to two. They got the better players. They got the momentum at this point. Foul the Temple dude. Send him to the line. Misses the first free throw. Misses the second free throw. Look at this, Jeffrey. Now they're going to have a chance to tie or take the lead.
Not so fast, my friend.
Except they didn't get the rebound. Oh, hell. Hell. You're screaming at the TV. Shot goes up. Well, it misses. Now. Now they're going to have a chance to tie or take the lead. Except they don't get the freaking rebound. Temple drains a three-pointer. And, like, that was just stabbing me in the heart right there. That was like, this is not going to go well. This is not going to go well. And the rebounding is a problem. Like, if you want to look at you know, is this a one-off or is this a sign of things to come? One of the things that suggests, I think it's more of a one-off than a sign of things to come, but they are right now in the country 344th in offensive rebounding percentage allowed. So if you are an opponent of the Tigers and you fire that ball up there and you miss it, there's a 36% chance you're going to get it to try again. You're going to get another shot at it, which is pretty disgraceful. Other ways to look at the miserable rebounding. PJ Haggerty had 4. Dane Danger had 5. Nobody else had more than 3. Musa, he's large, isn't he?
He is.
I mean, he's not particularly skilled offensively, so he'd be there for defensive rebounding, right?
And rim protection, yes.
And rim protection, but rebounding would be in the job description.
I agree.
21 minutes, 3 rebounds. So, and then, whatever. Then you got PJ Haggerty, who I personally take credit or blame for jinxing him. I was talking about Monday, or one of the things that my takeaways on the Tigers has been, I feel a total sense of calm when P.J. Haggerty goes to the line and he misses 3 straight late. And so that happens. It was not their night. I gave up 9 three-pointers, 9 of 22 from 3. Temple was. And so there you go. So let's all agree. They were favored by 8, I think.
Sounds right.
7.5, 8. That's not a great loss. So that's my that seems to be an understatement. But I was never someone who thought they were going to sail through this conference. I believe, Jeffrey, we had discussion earlier this week. And we talked about what the over or under on conference losses might be. And you said the over under should be 2.5, right?
Yep.
And I immediately took the over. And I took the over for 2 reasons. One is, it's hard to win all the games. We saw this last night, Michigan losing basically simultaneously while this happened. And John wrote about this in a column. You can read Parth's story in the Daily Memphian. Really, really, really good story. He was at Temple, and John wrote a column, a thoughtful column on it as well. While this was happening, Michigan was losing to a sub, 500 Minnesota team. You're not going to win all the games. And I know the whole it's their Super Bowl is a cliche, but it's also true.
You saw it last night.
You saw it last night. The gym was packed. They all got their little T-shirts on. They're all there was a lot of talk in the broadcast about, well, they're going to come out for Memphis. They're going to come out for this ranked team. They're going to and it's not so the fans are locked in. The atmosphere is better. And you know what? The players are coming out to play that game like Memphis comes out to play UConn.
Yeah.
Right. Or like Memphis is coming out desperate. What was the phrase that Chris Beard used? Emotional attachment.
Yeah.
There was he said it 17 times in the post game describing why Ole Miss lost to Memphis, and he said they had a greater emotional attachment to the game. They had a real emotional attachment to the game. Well, those Temple players had a real emotional attachment to that game, and the Tigers didn't. And by the way, that stands to reason. For the Tigers, it's just another game they have to win. For Temple, it is the game. And you face that every single night. So I never expected them to sail through the conference. I never expected them to lose 1 or 2 conference games. I'll still say 3, although I would certainly take 3 now.
Yeah,
I'd lock it in.
There is also this perspective of that was, like, when you look at
it was the last quad 2. Yes, it was the game that if you were looking at predictions, it was the toughest game left on their schedule.
Yeah.
So, yeah, by the way, it's also not some just hideous loss.
No.
They lost a quad 2 game. It was on the road, like, to a decent team. It wasn't some mortifying loss. And so, given that I never expected them to sail through the conference completely, it made all the sense in the world that they might have lost last night. And the other reason, so one is I just think perfection is hard. And I think fighting human nature is hard. And so we saw that last night. But the other reason that I never expected them to sail through the conference was they're a very good team. They have skilled guards. They've got useful, usually, bigs. They are not a physically dominant team that is just going to, by dint of showing up, destroy you. They are not the John Calipari Memphis Tigers. They do not have Joey Dorsey and Chris Douglas Roberts and Derek Flippin' Rose and, like, the teams that have just sailed through the conference schedule with barely a hiccup. They're dominant teams, physically dominant teams. This is a very good team with three skilled guards and a couple of useful bigs. It's also a shallow team. If P.J. Haggerty has an off night, you wonder a little bit where the points are coming from. We saw that certainly in the first half yesterday. It is just they're good. They're not a Death Star. And so if they do give their, you know, if they offer up 65% of their best, they're 100% capable of losing. If the old Memphis Tigers with CDR and Derrick Rose and Joey Dorsey gave up 65% of their best, they're still 65% better than anybody else. And so so I this didn't surprise me. And I guess the question then, Jeffrey, is we both agree that this, as losses go, this is one that you can understand. Quad 2 loss on the road, all of that, not a reason for panic, right? We are now, however, trying to parse whether this is, hey, they're going to lose a game. But this does not change what I think of the team or will likely happen. They're going to either lose two or three conference games. They're much the better team than anyone in the conference. And this is not the start of something bad. This is not going to lead to four or five conference losses. Okay. You know what? What we saw in the non-conference play was one thing. What we've seen since Florida Atlantic in three straight games is another thing. And in fact, there are alarms that should be rung because this is three straight games where they have not played anything like they did against Ole Miss, for example. And we are seeing flaws not just emerge, but the toll they can take. The rebounding, the lack of energy and focus in some games, giving up three-pointers. Turnovers wasn't a problem last night, but that will be it will be a problem again sometime. So how much, in terms of, yeah, this was nothing, this was a one-off, don't worry about it, or this is getting shades of last year. This is just about last year when they lost their first conference game last year. Where are you in that continuum?
So I would say not concerned, also not ignoring history. You see what I'm saying? Like, I don't think, if you want to draw parallels to last season, I think there are parallels to be drawn. I still have not been convinced that this team is going to follow that same path.
That team hated each other. I'm not worried that they're going to do it. But so to me, I wouldn't be concerned about the parallels to history. To me, the concern more is about things we are seeing in this team. The rebounding is going to continue to be a problem. Turnovers, although it weren't a problem last night, will be a problem. If you're not concerned about history, are you concerned about the flaws that you are seeing in this team? Would you still, by the way, put the over-under at 2.5?
Still probably.
You're taking the under?
No, I think now you've probably convinced me that I would probably go over. Like, I think the other thing is, okay, how many teams can really expose the weakness? Because I think what you can
see... I mean, East Carolina nearly beat them.
Okay, but this is the thing. So if you go and you look at... If you look at the offenses in the conference, East Carolina was third in offensive rebounding percentage, and Temple was second. So now you're getting into a situation where UAB is one.
What was North Texas?
North Texas is seventh, but FAU was fourth, and you already smoked them. So you see what I'm saying? Like, they have, of the games remaining, like UAB could potentially take advantage of this. And
they
got
two games against UAB. I won't surprise me at all if they split those games. They've been like crap to begin the season, but they're figuring some things out. That won't surprise me in the slightest. Basically the same team they lost to last year. That's two.
I don't see this team like being a team that loses four straight.
No, that's you know the mean? Difference. To me, I have no concern about that.
I'm with you. Are they going to lose games? Yeah.
What happened last year was they lost the first game, and then they lost four straight.
Correct.
And that's because they hated each other.
Yes.
And there was dysfunction. I'm not worried about that. In fact, I'm not worried about them making the NCAA tournament.
No, I mean, Cobb and I were talking about this. If their resume would have held up last year, and that's not any fault of their own. They scheduled what they could. It's just the teams didn't hold up their end of the bargain. If they would have had this year's resume, would they have still gotten in even with those bad losses? I think there's a possibility. Like right now.
Oh, I see. Right.
Right now.
Because last year, the non-conference schedule looked impressive at the time.
Correct.
But it actually was not. This one is really impressive. So even if they had the collapse, would they still have gotten in? Interesting question.
Yep.
Maybe. But the point is, it's a dramatically better non-conference schedule, not just on paper, but it is bearing up 100%. So that is absolutely. I'm not worried about them not making the tournament. I am worried about their seeding line and how many losses they can have. I draw the line at, I don't think they should. I'm not going to overreact to last night at all. At all. Like, I've been the one saying they're going to lose conference games. Didn't shock me in the slightest. And I also, by the way, wasn't alarmed by the two previous games. The job is to win the games.
Yeah.
I think they'll win most of the games. But I don't want them losing four or five.
I think the reality, though, is it becomes the, okay, who are they losing to? Because, like, last night...
They can lose to anyone.
But that's...
You can literally... You can't lose to Charlotte. I mean, then it would be a five-alarm fire.
UTSA, like...
Right, whatever. But you can certainly...
They can go to the UAB and lose. They can go to Wichita State and lose. Although, he typically has had the guys ready to go there. Although, different regime. But, like, it's the matter of, you know, are you losing to UTSA? Are you losing to, you know, who else is really down there? Tulsa? Like... If you have those, then those losses are just start to sink you a little bit. But I don't.
This one won't.
No, this loss
great damage. Will this knock them out of the top 25? I think it will. I think that's how people react when Memphis loses games. I don't actually think it should, but I think it will.
I mean, there's also kind of the question of like what happens to everyone else this week.
Yeah, there's that's always, of course, the issue. All right, we got to get to some other matters because we're going to return to talk to Jason Smith about this in just a little bit. We got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock, and then we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday. I've just been told, Jeffrey, and I think my information is correct, that we have MLK Day off.
You alerted me to the email.
So we also have to talk about like a million great football games that are unfolding this weekend. Before I do that, just returning really quick to the Grizzlies. They play the Spurs tonight. I'm really looking forward to it because we got some juice in this one. Vassell, who was the Spur who had a really good game the other night, he's already talking about the rematch. He was asked about it yesterday.
We're going up against in the West for a while.
I can't wait. Let's play them again and then again and again and again. I'm excited. Trust me. Can't wait to play them again.
In terms of trash-talking games, is San Antonio Memphis up there?
Them, Houston. Some of the games you look at, I mean, obviously look forward to all the games, but them games where you're chirping, you're going back and forth, that's you grow up playing like that, and that's exciting. So I know as soon as that jump ball, hopefully they don't call another foul and jump ball, but as soon as that jump ball goes up, I know it's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a good one. That is tonight. We'll talk more about Chris Harrington. Gigi Jackson played again. And by the way, Gigi has revealed that A, it was his idea to go to the G League in the first place, and then B, the plan was for him to go to San Antonio, but he told the coaching staff he needed a little more time to find himself. I think we can put an end to this non-controversy, can't we?
Yes, thank you.
It was always a non-controversy, but there you go. Last night, Gigi played again, 28 points, 8 rebounds, 8 of 15, 3 of 7 from 3, 2 steals. There you go.
It does feel like kind of getting a late Christmas present, right? Like having him come back.
It's so great.
Yeah.
It is amazing
to
think. Do you know how many minutes Ja and Gigi have ever played together?
Zero.
That's zero.
Yeah.
Zero. Talk about Christmas present. You know, you get to see that now. Anyway, that is happening tonight. In other news, Jeffrey, I don't know how much time we're going to have to get to this. We have a massive weekend of NFL games. And then Monday we got the title game. Like, this is about as good as it gets. It is interesting, though. Is the Bills-Ravens game just dwarfing everything?
I believe so. I was thinking about it this way. I cannot remember a game that happens on divisional weekend, which is one of my favorite weekends. I can't remember a game that I'm looking forward to like as much as this one, just wanting to watch it.
I can't remember a game I'm dreading.
No, I understand that.
I'm dreading as much as this one, just because I can't bear it. The notion of losing is just going to be excruciating. But it is interesting. You got the Texans and Chiefs tomorrow. Nobody believes the Texans are going to win that game, right? Like, nobody believes they're going to win.
I think everyone is expecting it's going to be like the Chiefs games mostly went this year, where the Chiefs are going to be a big favorite, and they're going to find themselves in a one-score game. They're going to win it.
So there you go. The Commanders, nice story. Does anyone believe they're going to beat the Lions?
I don't know if anyone believes they're going to beat the Lions. I do think that people are targeting that game as possibly like the fun shootout game.
Yeah. I mean, it's cute, right? Yeah. It's cute.
Well, I mean, I think we are open to the idea of, are we watching something different with Jaden Daniels?
Yes. But no one expects him to win.
I do not.
I mean, there you see the lines to those two games are 8.5 and 9.5. What's the game to the national championship game? Seems very similar.
Yeah, I think it's 8.5.
Right, same ballpark. I can try to talk myself into Notre Dame winning this game, but I'm going to have to do a good job of it.
Yeah, I mean, like I would say, like the case for Notre Dame is they are 13-2 against the spread. Like they've been doubted a lot, and they keep finding ways. But I'm with you. Like it's one of those games where if you told me Notre Dame kind of keeps it as a one-score game, I don't really have a problem with it. It's the how do I envision them winning? That's where I struggle.
Of the three non-Bills-Ravens games, is the Rams-Eagles most intriguing? Just because of the heater? Obviously the Rams that stumbled a little bit at the end, but we saw what they did last week. Like, peak Rams seems like it could be a...
I think so, because even though Philly's favored and deservedly so, you don't have to stretch to go, if the Rams play like they did on Monday, they can win the NFC.
And we've seen the Eagles collapse before.
Correct. What's
the line in that one?
I think it's 6 right now.
So I can talk myself into that one, but obviously this is Bills-Ravens, 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 and the whole world. What's the line now in the Bills-Ravens?
Is it 1.5?
Yeah.
I think so. The Bills opened as a slight favorite. Right now I'm seeing Ravens by 1.
Yeah. See, of course. I the Ravens have the better team. The Bills...
Did you see this stat? It is the first time the Bills have been a home underdog in a playoff game.
I sort of believe that.
That
should have been the Chiefs last year, but I got some things I would like to say about it. One is I'm grasping at straws because I think it is a really bad matchup for the Bills because of the Bills can't stop the run and the Ravens run, but in my effort to grasp at straws, tell me if you find this at all. I don't find it convincing, but here you go. Derrick Henry has never played in a game colder than 22 degrees. Lamar has never played in a game colder than 27 degrees. Ever, ever, ever. And this is going to be like 9 degrees.
Well, that's great to hear. Because you know I'm a big... When you take the Southern boys and you put them up in
but
the cold...
Derrick Henry is only going to hurt more in the cold. He's going to hurt other team players more. It's not...
Yeah, but what if he's cold?
I don't think it matters to Derrick Henry. Could it matter to Lamar being cold? I'm kind of surprised, by the way. Like Baltimore, the division they play in, kind of surprised that they never played in sub-27-degree temperature. Lamar has never, ever, ever. And he's being asked about gloves. I hope it's getting into his head.
I just really think I really think the Ravens need to come out and work on that passing game.
I do, too. In terms of the stakes here, one of the reasons it's such an unbelievably great game, and one of the reasons that the stakes seem so high, is if you look at the period from 2018 until now, so 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, that seven-year period, no team since the Super Bowl began has won more games in a seven-year period without getting to the Super Bowl than the Buffalo Bills. And no team, and the second team that has won the most games without getting to Super Bowl in a seven-year period?
The Ravens, I'm assuming.
It's the Ravens. So you have these two teams that are, let's be honest, both terrific with fabulous quarterbacks. It's the fact that they have been oppressed by the Kansas City Chiefs.
I would say the first thing that came to mind when you said that stat is like that is the ultimate Patrick Mahomes stat.
It's the ultimate. He has destroyed the legacies and created pressure on these franchises that he has ruled, and now they have to play each other even for the right to play Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City in Kansas City as they get to toy with the Texans. That's sort of what's happening here. I do think that if the Bills lose, it's not going to be great for Josh. It's going to be, I told you so. He's not the MVP. It's really going to be worse for Sean McDermott. If the Ravens lose, because Harbaugh has a Super Bowl already, it's going to be worse for Lamar.
Yes, I think that's I think that's true. Although I think it also matters like if Josh comes out and has a four turnover game,
yeah, then it'll be worse on Josh. And if it's a horrible clock mismanagement, then it'll be on.
I think it simply is this: if they just lose another close game.
So it is interesting to me. Here's one reason why it should matter. Honestly, even more to Lamar's legacy than it does, because people seem to forget how bad he's been in the playoffs. Ready?
Yes.
They have lost.
Not us.
They have lost playoff games with Lamar as their quarterback, where the opponent scored. Ready? 17 points. That was last year, Kansas yep. City.
Well, and, I mean,
that was
and the Titans.
That was 2003.
The Titans.
I'm sorry, Kansas City. I'm going to go through these. They lost. They lost to Cincinnati, where Cincinnati only scored 24 points. They lost to the Bills.
Of those 24 points, I believe seven also were a defensive touchdown. So 17 offensive points.
They lost to the Bills when the Bills only scored 17 points. They lost to the Titans when the Titans scored 28 points. They lost to the Chargers where the Chargers scored 23 points. They have lost games like those losses. His last four playoff losses, his defense has held the opponents to 17, 24, 17, and five losses, 28 and 23. Haven't hit 30 once. And he lost them all.
Hey, he just now, with the Pittsburgh game, he just now got above having more touchdown passes than interceptions in the playoffs. He's still not at 60% completion percentage.
It is honestly, and he goes in there with the better team around him, the better running back, the all pros.
I think every game he's lost, he's been a favorite. Maybe that Bills game. I think maybe that Bills game in Buffalo, I think they were underdogs.
All right, we're going to take a break. And we're going to talk to Jason Smith coming up next. Again, Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then a special edition, Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, on Friday. Back to the original slot. We'll do that in the second hour. Before then, I will tell you the semi-annual sale is ongoing at O'Call. This would be the perfect weekend to get in there. Because guess what else is coming? Cold weather. So you got fall and winter merchandise. Honestly, you walk through the store, you got savings up to 50% off on men's and women's merchandise, tailored clothing, outerwear, beautiful stuff. It's the same people who take care of you before Christmas on July 4th, only now, some of the best savings of the year. This weekend, make sure you get yourself to see your friends at O'Call. Going to take a break, come back with Jason Smith. We'll get his thoughts on what happened last night. It is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Jason Smith. Jason and John every single day from 11 until 2. So, Jason, that didn't work out well last night. Your thoughts?
Oh, no, I mean, it's obviously concerning. I think you'd be lying to yourself if you say Don't worry about it. They're going to go 17-1 in conference and feel really good about that. I mean, it's obvious there's a couple of issues. One in particular with this, it's not just last night. If you look at other teams' offensive rebounding percentage against you, that's basically other teams are getting 36% of their shots. They're rebounding 36% of their own shots against you. You're among the worst teams in the country at boxing out on the defensive glass. And so that's been a season-long thing. Temple absolutely killed you there with the second-chance points. I think the sequence you pointed to, what was it, about 5 minutes left where they rebound their own missed free throw. I mean, when you're getting offensive rebounds off missed free throws, where it's literally the advantage is to the defense with the way structurally things are set up, and you've got the inside position to box out. I mean, you know it's curtains, and then Mashburn gets his own miss, hits a three off that. It was two offensive rebounds off the free throw. It just felt like it wasn't going to be your night. And then there's a chance there, I guess, with a little less than 2 minutes left, just to show you how it really wasn't your night in terms of, P.J. Haggerty's got a chance to make it a one-possession game. He goes up there and misses two. And I know it ended up being three straight misses, but maybe a chance to steal that game late. You couldn't get that done. But what the concern is, if they're going to be this weak on the defensive glass, I mean, your bigs only had 11 of your 25 rebounds. And although it wasn't an issue last night, and you touched on that, turnovers have been an issue. It certainly were against DCU and allowed, the Pirates to get back in that game. Well, then, yeah, I mean, my man Norton Hurd IV, our basketball expert, thought when Memphis was 3-0 that losing any more than two games would be a disappointment. I think after last night, you're thinking, okay, well, maybe two, maybe three, maybe four, and you're certainly hoping and praying that you're not talking about anything like what we saw last year, because this is around the time they were 4-0 last year in AAC play. They were better last year in terms of their conference record, got a little bit further along before the wheels come off. I certainly don't think we're headed for that, but we could be headed for a year where, yeah, conceivably you could lose three or four in the conference if these weaknesses are going to continue to be. And, Jeff, I'm not sure they can really be addressed. Is there that big out there to go out and get? Is it, that you can help with this rebounding issue? You're just going to ask your guards to do more. You're short-staffed there. And then with the turnover issue, sure, you cleaned it up last night, but this team has shown. I mean, Tyrese Hunter had five last night turnovers. Even the guys that you need and depend on, Haggerty's a guy who, as great as he is, he'll turn the ball over as well. They've got to be out there, so I'm not sure that you can clean that up on any sort of consistent basis either. So reasons for concern. All that said, quad two loss, it's not going to kill you so long as you so long as you do the 15-3, 16-2 that right now it looks like that you're probably going to do in conference.
So I'm going to get back to the win total in conference just in a moment. But in terms of those flaws, I actually do believe that they can, with focus, clean up the turnovers. And you saw that last night. You've seen that, honestly, with some penny teams that went in second halves of games that are meaningful. Like, I do think that they have the talent that should be able to handle the ball without a million turnovers. Like, I'm not, because it's been a problem pretty much every year that Penny has been here, I'm not convinced it's never gonna come up again. But I think there's enough players on the roster that if they focus on it, they can, in critical moments, take care of the basketball.
Oh.
I don't know when it comes to rebounding, though. Like, Penny talked about effort last night in the post-game comments, and obviously rebounding is effort, but that's my real question. How much of this is, they're not trying hard enough on rebounding, and how much of it is, this is the roster. They're not a rebounding roster.
Well, I mean, if you're going to look specifically at the three bigs, think about Musa. Musa's trying to block everything, so it takes him out of rebounding position. And if Dane's not on the floor, what does that leave it to? Nick Jourdain and your guards, essentially, to grab the rebound. That's, again, what did Musa have last night? Three rebounds
because in 21 minutes.
Again, Musa, it's not the exact same thing, but it's similar to Jaren Jackson. Musa's built to block shots. And so he should be, and he was in that Ole Miss game. You'd love for him to be the kind of guy that can go out and get you double-digit rebounds every night, but he's not going to do that. He's going to get himself out of position a lot of times with that. Now, can you make an adjustment there? Sure, but I think that's sort of what Musa is. I mean, now at this point in his college career. So that doesn't help you. And if you don't have Dane on the floor with Musa, and we know, I mean, half the time he's subbing in for him to sort of be that other guy that can, you know, push some guys around and be that Mark Gasol type, Steven Adams type that's going to grab him, then yeah, it's quite a bit of pressure on Jordan and your, again, guards. That's why I say I'm not sure that that's necessarily fixable. Can you survive it? Sure. But last night, you know, team showed that, I mean, Temple laid the blueprint down for the rest of the AAC in terms of sort of similar to what we were saying about Memphis, the Grizzlies after the Houston loss, you know, push them around inside for those that are capable and give yourself a shot with second and third chance points could be your best offense. So I'm with you. I mean, the turnovers last night, you did clean them up. Just 10, it doesn't have to kill you. But the issue with that is it's not like you're running a ton of sets out there either, Jeff.
No.
You know, it is. It's a lot of one-on-one in the end of it. Tyrese taking a shot at the, you know, after he's gone one-on-one at the end of a buzzer maybe, or P.J. Haggerty doing the same thing. And in a lot of instances, just because of what you're running, and I think, too, because of the quote-unquote freedom that Penny gives his players in the offense, I think that's why you know, this has been a characteristic thing of Penny Hardaway's teams.
Is this the departure of Tyreek Smith biting him in the ass?
Oh, I mean, 6'8", athletic as hell. He's a guy that certainly, I think, would have averaged 6-7 rebounds for you. More to me, Tyreek was the guy that could have helped you with, you know, with him and Jordan, you're splitting minutes there. And sure, maybe there's a time where they're both on the floor, but rather than having Jordan as a, 30 to 35-minute guy, you've got sort of both of them as 20-minute guys or 20 to 25-minute guys. Either way, to take how you would have used those two, you know, out of it, that's just a fourth big and an athletic one at 6'8" that absolutely would have helped you in this department and certainly would have, you feel like, would have helped you last night. So, you know, I know folks were quick to run him off, and maybe in the end it was the best thing. If there were issues, Tyreek Smith was going to cause chemistry issues because he wanted to start. You, unlike Jordan, he wouldn't give you the same effort if he's coming off the bench. Hey, you know, maybe you can get by without, and we know from, I know Parrish put the number out there, certainly seemed like with the money he was getting, you couldn't afford to go much higher. But if that was indeed the case, but my gosh, just in terms of from a roster standpoint, you went out and picked him for a reason, signed him up for a reason. We're seeing now, you know, it's coming back to bite you in terms of on those boards. This, again, wasn't just an issue last night. It's been an issue all year long on the defensive glass.
All right, so big picture, if I had asked you yesterday, set the over-under for losses in conference at 2.5, would you have taken the over-under? You specialize in over-under. I've heard your show. You guys do this as a regular segment. So would you have taken the over or under if the losses had been 2.5? And where would you say now?
Before yesterday, I'd probably still gone under. You know, I've been with my man Hurd that this team's going to finish up 16-2, maybe even a shot at 17-1. But no, I mean, at this point now, like I said, I could see 3 or 4 losses. I mean, UAB's playing better, and they're a team with Yaxel,
yep.
The way he can rebound.
He can beat
my
you
goodness,
up.
You can just envision them absolutely punking you inside with their ability to rebound. Again, Musa's going to have to make some sort of adjustment, or you're going to have to find a way to get, you know, Dane and him on the floor together. I don't know how you do that when you've only got 10 fouls between the two of them. Yeah, I mean, you certainly have to be careful there. So, no, man, whether it's UAB or on the road at Wichita State, which is still, I suppose, got a chance to be a quad two, I could easily see 3 or 4 now. So I'd have
if
to
I'm
go.
I'm offering you 3 and you can lock it in. Are you taking it?
I'd take 3 all day long because I still think 3 absolutely keeps you out of 8-9. I think, though, you know, Palm before last night, Jerry Palm, we talked a lot about Lenardi having them as a 5, but Palm had them as a 3 before last night's loss. You lose 5 spots at the net as a result of last night's loss, and that's what it's going to be in the AAC. When you're winning, you might climb a spot if you're lucky. Hell, you might drop one if the game was close. But you lose 2, 3, 4 of these games, and it can cost you 5, 10, maybe 12, 15 spots that, you know, hopefully aren't enough, you know, to damage enough where you're back in that 8-9. I still think there's enough done, Jeff, in terms of the non-conference resume. It's broken the right way where it feels like last year's had broken the wrong way, that at least you're out of that 8-9, and hopefully, you know, 5 seed still in play, maybe even a 4 if you can, you know, really turn this thing around and run.
So I heard you on yesterday, and you were asked about who's going to be the Bears coach, or who do you want as the Bears coach. And what was interesting to me was, you know, all along you'd wanted a Ben Johnson. But now this goes to show our ability as fans to talk ourselves. So then you're like, now that it appears Ben Johnson's going to the Raiders, you're like, he's not necessarily, going to be so great.
Next Adam Gates. Exactly. I mean,
we can do that, can't we? Yeah, we have an infinite capacity to do that. You get your choice, though, handpicked. You get to handpick. They're coming to their senses, and they're going to ask Jason to make the hire. Who are you hiring?
I'll just put it this way. Don't hire Brian Flores. Anyone but Brian Flores.
Because of the Tua stuff?
The Tua stuff. I don't believe in his defense. If Jeffrey
Blitzing
knows,
like crazy.
If they're not getting to you through the blitz, they're not getting to you. And the Goffs and the Staffords have no problem with that. And so there's a number of flags there to me. We need a whole, you know, our defense right now lacks up front guys, you know, guys that create pressure on that line. That's the kind of pressure we need to create foundationally, like the Lions have done, you know, and that's on both sides of the ball. That's the kind of fix we need. And just, there's a number of reasons. And listen, I hope Brian Flores, I'm not rooting against him for his coaching career, that he really did learn something from the experience with Tua, the Dolphins experience as a head coach. I just don't want him as my coach with a quarterback I already know is fragile minded, and Caleb Williams and him having to be the guy that has to put together the plan for him. It's too risky. That to me just leads us to more of the same for the Bears. So I'll take anybody. Not rooting against Brian Flores, the man, or his chances with somebody else, but I just don't like that fit for us.
Jason, I appreciate
him and Mike McIntyre right now. Mike McCarthy, excuse me, are the two favorites. So I'm not really thrilled walking around right now. Anyway, good luck.
I appreciate
weekend.
It, Jason. Thanks very much.
Take care, brother.
That's Jason Smith from the Daily Memphian. We got Chris Harrington. Then we got Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, on Friday. We have not touched on a few other things, Jeffrey, that I wanted to get to real quickly. One is, so Tom Brady's agent has said he's gonna fulfill the 10 years of his deal, of his TV deal. Do you believe that or do you not believe that?
When I saw the story, my first thought is, like, that's kind of posturing for a buyout.
Interesting. Liv has signed a TV deal
with
Liv
Fox.
Golf with Fox. And so they were on CW, which meant no one saw them. No one cared, right? Now they're going to be on Fox. Is this a game changer for Liv?
I mean, it means that more people have the opportunity to watch. I still don't think this is a game changer. Like, in the end, the format is what. And they don't really have, like, they only have a few guys that you really want to watch.
And then finally yesterday, the Department of Education reminded everyone, it was just fascinating, that, when you're handing out your NIL dollars, that just because it's NIL dollars doesn't mean that Title IX doesn't apply, and those dollars have to be spent equally between men and women. And that would be a massive burden for the way, or change in the way a lot of teams are. I'll just put it this way. Alabama is not planning to spend as much on their women's athletes in NIL as they are on their football team, right?
Correct.
Nor does anybody.
Correct.
Right? Nor is anybody. So if this were to hold, it would be, and it's one of the real issues, honestly. It's one of the real issues when you're blending these freaking professional sports teams and educational institutions.
Yes.
Right? The values of an educational institution should be, you know what? We care as much about women as men. We're not, you know, we're not in this to make money, or we're not in this. We're in this to support our students. And it doesn't matter if you play golf or if you play volleyball or if you're a man or you're a woman, whatever. We're trying to support you all equally. And those are our educational values. This is not a capitalistic world here in the world of education. We're just trying to support our students. that makes sense in the world of a university. In the world of professional sports, you pay the people who bring the money in.
Correct.
Right? Like, and so when you got this, when you're splicing one on top of the other, it just doesn't work. Now, what's probably going to happen, honestly, is this Department of Education. Hell, there may be no Department of Education in a week because the Trump administration is coming in. And just like, for example, this is just true with the investigation in the Memphis Police Department, right?
Yep.
The reason it was rushed, it appears to me, and concluded by the time before the Trump administration came in is the Trump administration has no interest in that. And so, and I think it's the same thing here. These rulings, advice, guidance, whatever it was yesterday, my suspicion is it's all going to be either reversed or ignored by the Trump administration.
Everyone that I pay attention to that understands college sports and law said, talk to me in 3 weeks.
Right, exactly. Talk to me in 3 weeks. And I'm not even weighing in on the merits.
Right,
I'm just...